I'm Steve Martin. This is Unreal Bluegrass. We're going to begin our conversation with Mike Andes from the wonderful band Nothing Fancy. They have a brand new album. It's entitled Here We Go Again. We're going to start off this part of the program with a tune, all three of these tunes that we choose, by the way, to use and intersperse in interviews and conversations, if you will, are picked by the artist. And Mike Andes said, let's start with Here We Go Again, which is the name of the album that's coming up now. Then we're going to talk to Mike at length about Nothing Fancy, about this album. A lot of stuff to learn from Mike. I really enjoy this. I think you will, too. For the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great cut, Here We Go Again, which is from Nothing Fancy's recent release. Actually, it will be released on the 29th of September. I happen to have it early because I'm a fortunate person that gets these things. So I have on the phone Mike Andes. Mike, I've been a fan of Nothing Fancy for so long, and the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass get a regular diet of Nothing Fancy in every program, but I never talked to you. And I got the new album, which is called Here We Go Again. We just played the title cut, and I thought, I need to talk to Mike. I know you. I've met you. I've been to your concerts. So Mike Andes of Nothing Fancy, thanks so much, and welcome to the program.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for getting in touch with me, and I apologize that we haven't done this earlier, but it's great timing. The new album, Here We Go Again. Nothing Fancy's going strong, and what a pleasure, and hey to all your listeners out there, too.
Thanks. Well, you know, I figure it's my fault. I can reach out to you. I knew where you were, and like I said, I've met you after shows and whatnot that you would remember anything about that, but I've always been a fan. Every time a Nothing Fancy tune comes on, it's always introduced by you, because one of the times we met, I had a small recorder, and I said, record me a thing that says who you are and what you're listening to. So they hear your voice and your music all the time, but I just thought, well, I better get back to Mike for a couple of reasons. Number one, I really love the album. I love Nothing Fancy. I just think the band is one of the most consistently good, great bands and live. I just don't know that anyone puts together the show with the vocals and the strength and everything that Nothing. And I mean that sincerely. I've seen you enough to know that. And let me tell you this, Mike. Someone that works in my office is kind of like peeking through the window of being a bluegrass fan. It's the best way I can describe it. And she went to a festival, and you were there. And she knew some of the names of the bands because she's trying to learn. It's our bookkeeper, so, you know, she's got some smarts. So she comes back to me, and she said, you know, that was a great thing. It was Joe Mullen's thing up in Wilmington. That's what it was. And there was a band there. I can't remember their name. And all these other bands were there, and they were really great. They were great. They played a couple shows, and they were just great in the audience. And I said, it was Nothing Fancy, wasn't it? She goes, yeah, that's it. So from her description, she goes, yeah. I said, no, they're a fantastic band. So she came back, was more excited with the band she couldn't remember than the rest of the festival.
That's a good compliment, you know.
I think so, and I happened to figure out who it was for. So how many albums then? And this album, by the way, Here We Go Again, is on Mountain Fever, and there's 12 cuts on it. One is an instrumental, Memories of Monroe. All the other ones include vocals of various members of the band. You sing a lot of them. You wrote the cut we just heard, Here We Go Again. How many albums Nothing Fancy has put out?
Nothing Fancy has actually put out, I believe it's 17 albums through the years, and we added it up one day. It's something like 217 songs that we've recorded.
Man.
And you know, the amazing part with the band I've got right now, and all the bands before, I'm talking, you know, members that come on board and think, the band right now, they're reaching back and they're pulling songs from a lot of the earlier albums. There was a lot of songs from the earlier albums that we never did live on stage. They were pretty intricate songs. And so now it's a good problem. We have too many songs. Normally a show, in a 45-minute show, I can do 12 songs. I can get 12 songs in.
Mm-hmm.
So you take 217 songs and divide it by 12, there's a lot of 45-minute shows there.
Yeah, okay.
And the cool thing is, like I said, right now they're reaching back and they're they're going like, hey, Mike, how about we put this song? And they're looking at, man, I've got to relearn that, and I'm the one that wrote it.
I want to make sure, that's a good problem to have, but I want to make sure that we credit all the people that are in the band, and also somebody who jumps in on a vocal with you, who, I've always enjoyed the singing that Amanda is now with. She actually works for Mountain Fever. Last time I talked to her, she was going, she's still doing her, Amanda Cook, still doing her music, but also she has a position with Mountain Fever, so you snuck her
in. Yeah, she's a vital part of Mountain Fever, and it's funny, on this album, I recorded a song that I wrote, it's called Crash and Burn.
Yeah.
And it was a part on there that was too high for our tenor singer. Jake Lazon was on guitar at the time of this album, and he was tenor. And he wasn't a true tenor, which he would admit to you himself.
He
did the job,
you
know.
He does his job,
And we got to that part, and it was like, he said, man, he said, I can't hit it. And we all went in there. We tried to sing falsetto and everything else on it, and it just wasn't working. And Aaron Ramsey, he said, I can probably get Amanda to come up here and do that. And so he went down the office and
got her out of the office.
Yeah, said, sure, I can do that. She came up, and she nailed it. I mean, so that's the kind of cool story about that. I mean, she came on there and did a great job.
I have a lot of
certainly
respect.
Was going to, you know, I wasn't going to leave her off the album.
No.
She said, you don't need to put, I said, whoa, now you need to be.
Yeah.
Need to be acknowledged.
Need to be credited. And I have so much respect and for Amanda and everything that she's doing. So she comes in and joins. And then I think the last time we talked, she told me I'm going to be working for Mountain, which is a great thing. But it's great that you can pull somebody in from down the hall. I think Amanda fit very well. We're going to talk more about that Crash and Burn song.
It was better to get her to do it than to get Mark Hodges to do it.
Well, there's a lot of good rationale behind that.
Yeah. Now, but he was willing, but I said, oh, let's try Amanda first.
Let's do Amanda. I agree with you. So, 17 albums in them, and they're all, and I don't think I have all 17. Some of them may have been before I started doing this program, or maybe I haven't caught up with them. But, Mike, I will just tell you again that in this, we're going to talk about the new, a lot of the new players. You mentioned one, Jake Lazon gave it a shot. Is it Jacob? You have two Jacobs in your band, which to me
is unusual. His name was Jacob Lazon. Okay. He was from Canada.
Why he's got that E on the end of it.
Yeah. And a great guy, tremendous guitar player, and tremendous singer. Worked out well for us. He got an opportunity to, after the album was done and everything, he got an opportunity to go work with one of his heroes in the business in Canada, and couldn't stand in his way for that.
No.
And he's doing great. He did a great job on the album. Like I said, he's a tremendous guitar picker and great guy. We had a lot of fun. I learned a lot about Canada working with him, and he learned a lot about the United States of America. So.
Well, and then you have Jacob Flick, who I don't know, Jacob Flick, banjo and pedal steel guitar, because I want to talk to you about that's what bars are for, where that tune comes into kind of a Western. It's the last cut on the album, but so I want to make sure we hit on all the people on this band. Jacob Flick, banjo and pedal steel. So often banjo players play pedal steel. I don't know who started that. I can't play pedal steel. I pick out a banjo, but I know that they seem to, I guess it's the fingers. I guess they got the picks.
You know, I think it's a challenge. You know, banjo is not an easy instrument to play. It takes a lot of coordination between your right and your left hand. And if you ever watch somebody play steel guitar, if you watch somebody trying to learn to play a steel guitar, it's almost like watching two groundhogs in a feed sack fighting, because they're doing things with their feet, they're doing things with their knees, they're doing things with both hands. And Jacob, he's a great guy, really is a tremendous banjo player. He's a graduate of East Tennessee State University, and he actually grew up near my hometown in Virginia. I lived in a town called Timberville, and he was from a little town called Singers Glen, Virginia. And I really didn't know a lot about him. Actually, since he's been in the band, I found out that it was his goal in life to be a member of Nothing Fancy.
Wow.
And he actually sent me a picture the other day. He was 14 years old, and he got his picture taken with me. And, you know, that's humbling for me. And he came on board, and I couldn't be any more pleased. He just gets better each and every week. He adds so much to the band, and very, very band conscious. You know, he's looking out for the business, and he's putting on a show each and every week out there on stage. So doesn't get much better than that.
No, if they're into the band concept, you know, and they're there to take care of the band concept and the sound, you can't, and he's really talented. I've enjoyed listening to him. You know, you have. By the way, let me ask you this. I'm talking to Mike Andes of Nothing Fancy, if you're just tuning in. And I'm going to go through some of the songs. We'll talk about more of that and more of the band members. But I want to ask you this, Mike. Who wrote what I will call the liner notes on the inside of this CD? Because somebody put all the words of the song in the sentences, and it just cracks me up. Who did that? Who's responsible?
Well, I started it. One day I was out here. The album was getting pretty close to being done, and I sent a thing to the guys. I was out here one morning, and I grabbed my phone, and I started going through this thing, making this paragraph, including the song titles into the paragraph. And I went through everything, and I sent it out to all the band guys and our festival coordinator, our band manager, Robin Wines. She got a copy of it, too. Well, she took it and kind of honed the edges of it and stuff and put it all together, so I can't take full credit for it, but I'm the one that started it. It started kind of as a joke, and she took it, and she said, this really wouldn't be a bad idea for liner notes.
I think it's great. I mean, it's a great way to do liner notes. I love it.
I just read it before you called, because, you know, you record an album. Once you're done, you don't want to look at it for a while. So I actually opened this thing. I thought, man, that was cool. That was a pretty good idea.
Mike, I'm going to read the first couple sentences, and I can't highlight them in my voice. I can't make them bold. But here's what Mike and I are talking about, the liner notes, which tickled me. And here's how it starts. Well, friends, it's a dog-eat-dog world. But, hey, here we go again. There's two titles already in there. Here we go again, period. As I reflect on times go by, that's the third one, I'm blessed to say we survived and that we didn't crash and burn. In that first two lines, there's four song titles. The pandemic fears and worries are mostly gone at last, another song. So I just laughed about it. I thought, well, how come nobody's ever done that before? Liner notes are cool and all, and I love liner notes because I learn from things, but I thought that was about as good as it gets.
I think we should get an award for that. Get back on it. That's pretty slick.
We'll put that in the bin for next year. We'll put that in the bin for awards next year when you'll be eligible for it. I like it. You have we were talking about Jacob Flick. There is James Cox and John Cox. James Cox is the bass player, but there's a couple songs written by James Cox and John Cox. And John is not in the band, but I'm assuming they're brothers.
That's James's brother.
Okay.
And James, he had been with the band probably 5-6 years, and he's actually moved on since the album. But he wrote three songs. And he came to, you know, I knew he was a songwriter. He's actually one of triplets, and two of them are identical. The other one doesn't look anything like him. And John is his identical brother. I knew that they were they're kind of into old 70s rock.
That's a good description.
So I said, James, why don't you pitch us a few of your songs? Where see, he sent some songs, and I chose, the three that he wrote on there, Gone at Last,
Little Island Love.
Yeah, Little Island Love. And if you listen to them, they have that kind of 70s rock feel.
They do. They really do. I was going to mention that to you because as I go through, here's how I prepare. It's not a big secret. I listen and listen and listen and listen and listen over and over and over. And I felt a different a feel from those. Now, you've explained why that happens that way. But let's say Gone at Last, The Things I'm Sorry For, and Little Island Love are tunes that came from James and John Cox, and you were explaining maybe the different feel they have, which fits well on the album. But,
right. Like I said, it's very interesting to hear, you know, everybody's take on music, and I knew from working with James, he loved that old, he loved bluegrass, don't get me wrong on that, but he also loved the old rock, the old 70s. Sometimes he'd make us listen to 40s music and stuff going down the road. So he had quite the, and he's a young guy. And it was like, man, here's a young guy with an old soul, you know. And so anyway, when he brought those songs, I thought this is going to add a lot to the album. One thing in bluegrass music to me, don't get me wrong, I love the traditional bluegrass, and I will always give the Roots credit for bringing it to what it is. But sometimes you need to, it's like watering a flower, you know. Sometimes you you have to put a little bit of Miracle-Gro in that water to get it to be a little brighter.
You got to add a little something
and
to it.
So, and that's what I was looking at with this album. You know, we had come out of the pandemic. That's where the title came. Here We Go Again. We had, like, taken 2 years off from recording. I wanted something fresh. I knew the whole dynamics of the bluegrass audience was changing. So I wanted something out there. So that's why I wanted to include his writing. And I think we did the right thing. I mean, it's great. We actually released Little Island Love, I think it was, as a single earlier, and did good for us. So, again, it was, you know, it's part of the recipe of making an album. Some people have a theme they go by when they record an album. I've never done that. I try to record an album as would be a live show. You know, it's just like on a live show you do – you grab the audience with the first three songs, and then you kind of slow it down and let them get their breath, and then you pick it back up. And I look at an album being the same way. It's when you put that thing in, you're listening to it. I want you to be in tune with it. I don't want it to be background music. I want people to go, man, that was a good song.
I'm glad you said that, because I do some artists are on the show, and they have a theme, and they pick out songs. But every once in a while, one such as you're just describing, I'm talking to Mike Andes, nothing fancy, you put them in a lineup for that very reason that you're stating, and I think that's great, because, you know, a live show, you have to have that attitude. You have to come out, and I always say you got to come out with, you know, hit them with three right away, and then you can change around, but you want to get their attention. So that's kind of what you're talking about here, and the way this album was laid out. Yeah, that's good. Let me hit Chris Sext, and then I want you to introduce us to Time Gone By, which is a tune that you wrote. I'm going to play that for the audience, and we'll get back to some more of the music and the milestone coming up for Nothing Fancy. So tell me a little about Chris Sexton.
Chris Sexton is an amazing musician. He's qualified, let's see, he's a classical violinist and making his living in a bluegrass band. He came on board with me back in 1998, and he's been with us ever since. And you know, it's like I tell him all the time. I said, Chris, you put fancy into Nothing Fancy. When you listen to his breaks on the fiddle and his backup and stuff, you can hear that classical training in there. And then it just all kinds of weaves around and comes out as a bluegrass thing. And he makes it work. He plays a five-string fiddle, and which a lot of folks don't know about that. But they're,
Mike Cleveland does it, and I still don't. Yep. You know, I see a couple, but not many.
It's got a low C viola string on it. It gives them that low drone.
Okay.
And actually, I build violins. I built the one that Chris plays. But that adds a lot to the band. On the slow songs, he can really hit that low note and things. He just adds so much. He sings baritone in our harmony, very in tune with our arrangements of songs. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about him. Tremendous. I pick on him on stage all the time. He picks on me. And like I told him one day, I said, the day that I stop picking on you, you better go get my blood pressure checked. But that's just how we roll. But a great guy, he really is. He's put out some solo albums. He's getting ready to take a whack at another solo project, and I'm proud of him for that. I'm just glad to have him in the band. Like I said, he does a great job. He pretty much do anything I ask of him, and right there. And he lives in Manassas, Virginia, for those folks wondering where he came from or where he's at.
I like to always cover the band, and I like to get the people that have appearances on the album. So we've kind of gone through that. We've talked a little bit what you were thinking about with laying out this brand new Here We Go Again. And I want you then, the first cut on the album, Time Gone By, one you had written, I want you to do an intro for that. We'll play that for the audience, and I'll come back and talk to Mike Andes at Nothing Fancy some more. So you give us the intro to Time Goes By.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're enjoying this interview. Here's a song off of our brand-new album, Here We Go Again. This song is entitled Time Gone By. Sit back, enjoy.
Okay, perfect. We'll be back in a minute. All right, there. We heard Time Gone By, first track on Nothing Fancy's brand new Here We Go Again. And I'm talking to Mike Andes, a wonderful band. I'm going to have you. Oh, so let's do this then. It's a great song. You pick up John Prine, Paradise, the 11th cut. So you go back and you find some of those, and everybody loves Paradise. Everybody loves John Prine. You know, I grew up in Kentucky. I still live here. I didn't know until I had to go to Western Kentucky that all these places he was ticking off were places. There's the Green River. There's this. They're real. I didn't know until I'm driving.
Right.
I don't know why. I'm driving Western Kentucky. I thought, oh, down there we're Paradise. And there's a city called Paradise. So you go down and pick up John Prine's Paradise for the 11th cut.
Yeah, you know, I've always loved that song. Like you said, everybody does. And when we were at a show one day, and I don't know, I said, hey, guys, let's do Paradise. We had never done it before, and I started it off on the – I told him, I said, just hang with me. I said, I'm going to give it a little mandolin intro thing here. And we did it, and the crowd went wild. I mean, you could just tell. It looks like a breath of fresh air, and they loved the arrangement that we did. And then when we were – talking about recording this album, I said, well, we should probably put some cover on here, something or whatever. I said, how about the John Prine Paradise? And the guys go, man, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So we put it on there basically just like we had done it live on the stage that day. And it, you know, it, that is a song that, I don't know, it's going to live forever.
Yeah.
Because it's just got that, not only the words, but it's got that feel. You know, I always look at a melody and the sound of a song, even before I listen to the words, it drives my wife crazy because I'll say, I don't know what that song's about. She said, well, you didn't listen to the words. I said, well, no, I was listening to the sound. I was listening to the melody.
Yeah.
And so that's the same way with Paradise. It's and what I'm going at, there's been shows where we'll be making the set list, and I'll say, let's start the show with Paradise. And the guys will look at me like, that's really slow. And I'll say, trust me, I think it'll work.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go out there on stage, and the MC says, and now, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for the band. Nothing fancy, you know, the crowd's applauding, and we kind of bring them into a lull and start that little mandolin thing with them, and they go crazy. You get applause before you're halfway into the first verse.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs.
Since we're talking about John Prine, and I'm talking to Mike Andes, and just give me a John Prine moment here. I think, yeah, you're right. That'll last forever. That song's it tells a story. That's a real story. But his music is so accessible, but it's brilliant, but it's accessible. So when people hear John Prine music, that it's I mean, nobody writes like he does, but he's not he's just playing. He's playing music, and it doesn't get so complex that you need to get out and stop and think about what chord he's playing next or how. You know,
I know
what I'm saying? It's right there for you. It's easy to pick up.
It drives me crazy because I love his music, and I'll be listening to it, and I'm like, I could have written that.
Yeah. That's right.
But yet you can't. You stop and think, well, I'm going to turn that off and get my pad and pencil here, and like, no, I don't have anything coming. It drives me nuts as a songwriter.
But it has to.
Stuff like that just drives me crazy.
He was so easy and so casual, and just like, here's another one. You think, well, that's a gold mine right there all by itself.
You know, it goes back to the beginning of Nothing Fancy. Our whole band philosophy, business philosophy, was always simpler is better. And we've kind of lived with that throughout the past 29 years, going on 30 years. And it works. And when you listen to John Prine music, you can almost hear that philosophy in his music. It was like, hey, there's a great song. It's gonna grab you.
Yeah.
It's gonna tick somebody off, but it's gonna make somebody happy. It's something in that song for everything.
That's right. Yeah.
And the bottom line is, simpler was better.
Exactly. That's exactly what he. That's a great choice. I love the story about how it got introduced into the band. So let's then drop down to the cut, the very last cut. I've mentioned this before. That's what bars are for. This has a Western swing, and then you have Jacob Flick, the banjo player, like we said, plays pedal steel on this one. But I haven't heard a lot of Western music from you.
No, there's been a few tunes through the years that we put a little Western swing feel to a song, a couple ones, but not actually an actual original song done with the Western swing style, but. The funny story about this song, and people are always asking me, Mike, did you do a lot of songwriting during the COVID? And I said, well, I did write several songs during the COVID era, but they were all bar songs. And that's the honest truth. I would sit down and I wrote probably three or four the songs relating to a bar. I don't know if it was because they wouldn't let me go to one or what the deal was, but I come up with this song, that's what bars are for. Okay. And I really liked it. I liked the feel of it. And so when we was doing the album, we decided we was going to record it because Jacob had the steel guitar and stuff, and we had practiced it, you know, and, man, it sounded so good. So anyway, I'm in there. We recorded. We put the rhythm tracks down, put the leads down, and I got in the vocal box and started to sing this song. And our producer, Aaron Ramsey, he said, no, he said, that ain't going to work. We got to find somebody with a more of a country voice to sing this song. And it actually upset me. It kind of ticked me off. I thought, man, I wrote the song. Tell me I can't sing my own song.
I'm Mike Andes. I wrote this song. What are you talking about?
So anyway, I come out into the engineer room, and I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, we need somebody that's got a little more country. He said, I'll find somebody to come in and sing. And he said, we'll get some. I said, whoa, stop. I said, we're not going to pull an outsider in here to sing my song, some stranger. He said, well, do you know of anybody that could sing or would sing it? I said, well, I'd calm down by now. I said, our banjo player, Jacob Flick, I said, he's out on the bus. He's asleep. I said, but whenever I hear him singing, he's never sung on stage, but whenever I hear him messing around, I said, he sounds a little bit like Keith Whitley. He said, man, that's what we need. Right there's what we need.
Wow.
So I go out on the bus, and Jacob was only like 21 years old at the time, and I really did not think he was going to want to do this. So I opened his curtain, and I said, Jacob, I said, you want to sing that song I wrote, well, that's what bars are for? And he goes, yeah. And I thought, here, I get another stab. But so I said, all right. So he went in the studio, and I got in the bus and went to bed because I didn't have any more to do in there. So next morning I got up and I went in there and listened, and I thought that actually was the right choice. He's got that twang to him, and it just matches the song. He did a great job on it, and it makes a great story for live shows.
Yeah, oh, yeah, heck yeah, heck yeah. Listen, I want to touch on a few more things. Justin Old Farmer, I think, is just, well, you know, that's just a perfect, it's current. I guess the theme of the song has been around for a while. You know, farmers farm because that's what they love to do.
Right. That's one of them songs when you're a songwriter and one just kind of falls out of your head and it takes you about 10 minutes to write all the verses and the chorus. That's one of them right there.
Yeah.
When I write songs, I kind of view my writing as watching a video on CMT, you know. Mm-hmm. When I'm writing, I want somebody to be able to visualize what I'm writing about.
Yeah.
And that song, you know, he stands on the front porch, stretches out his arms, and thanks God for the blessings that, you know.
Another day.
You can just picture us, a farmer, doing that before he goes to work in the morning.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great so right above that, then, you got the Dog Eat Dog World, which, you know, by the way, I love dogs. You and I talked about dogs a little bit. I've never seen a dog eat a dog.
You know, I've never either, but it is kind of funny how they'll make toys to look like dogs for your dog to chew on. Think about that.
That's true. I've seen dogs eat a lot of stuff that dogs shouldn't eat, and they're happy to eat it when they find it on the ground. But I've never seen anyway. Dog Eat Dog World is...
Really going with that. I know. Don't paint that picture for a dog.
No. So tell me a little bit about that song that I want you to ease us into Crash and Burn, and I'll let you go because I know you got stuff to do. But talk a little bit about Dog Eat Dog World.
Yeah, you know, the Dog Eat Dog World, this day and time, there's so much stuff going on and things that we just... You can't understand, you know. It's just like, why would they do that? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? I think a lot. And that song came out of, you know, watching the news, seeing things that happening around here and around me, around you. And, it, you know, it just kind of just came together. And just sitting there, sometimes a songwriter, you're putting your feelings out there. And, you know, I feel for a young lady who's trying to raise a child or two children and relying on child support, and the deadbeat dad doesn't pay, you know, and it is a sign of the times, you know. It's things that are happening, and I just kind of put it in words there. It's just, it's not against anybody in particular,
nope,
or nothing,
nope,
like
not
that
at all
whatsoever.
It's just
it's me looking out over Well, right now I'm looking out over a cornfield, and
I know.
If you get into that mood, you know, and you're thinking about this happened, that happened, you saw this, you saw that, that's where the words came out on there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that a lot of people can relate to what's in that song.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of people that would agree that, yeah, it's a dog-eat-dog world. And all my songs, I think anybody could go and look at every song that I've written, there's always going to be a positive note in that song. You can ask anybody that's been around
me. You're built that way.
Positive. I believe so much in positive thinking, and I cannot stand negative. Even though I might be writing about a negative situation, somewhere in that song is a positive line is, hey, if we continue doing this, we can get out of this hole.
Yeah,
you know?
Or
if somebody passes away, we'll see them again. You know, I've always got a positive in somewhere in the song, and this song has it also. If you listen all the way through, it's we can make it a better world if we all, you know, kind of come together and solve these problems.
Yeah, it is. It ends up. I mean, it's yeah. You hit the nail on the point of what the song is. I like it. I lied to you because I want you to talk about the only instrumental. Then I'm going to have you introduce Crash and Burn. So there's an instrumental, Memories of Monroe.
Memories of Monroe. Yep, I wrote that song years and years ago, and I kind of had it on the back burner. And I brought, we needed an instrumental for the album. And I said, hey, guys, listen to this. What do you think? And to me, I'm not copying Bill Monroe at all on anything. But there's a few little licks in there that will kind of give you a little, you know, hint of Monroe's instrumentals. And that's where the title came from. And it's a catchy title, Memories of Monroe. You know, we never want to forget Bill Monroe
no.
for starting this great music and anything like that. With this instrumental, if there's something in there, somebody hears like, yeah, I can tell. That's reminds me of such and such here and such there. That's where the title came in. It's even though it sounds intricate, it's a pretty simple melody, really. And it's just got some, it's kind of like taking a Volkswagen and putting chrome wheels on it and some pinstriping. You know, it's still a Volkswagen, but hey, it's pretty fancy.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. Isn't it, Mike, I'm talking to Mike Andes of Nothing Fancy if you're just tuning in. Mike, isn't it, you're probably close to my age. I'm probably a little older, but I think you go back far enough. Wasn't it amazing to be listening to this music, bluegrass, and going to festivals when Bill Monroe, the founders of this music and all that lineage, they were still walking around performing. And the music was there.
Yeah.
I still think, what a weird thing. You're going to see these guys who invented the music, and you know he lasted a long time and still was productive. But in all of them.
I was able to, actually, I opened up for Bill Monroe, a little show in Rutgersville, Virginia. I got to meet him. He invited me out on his bus. We talked, and... You know, and looking back, like you said, it's hard to believe now that when, especially I'm working with 20-year-olds and stuff
That's
out here,
right.
and,
yeah.
you know, they didn't have the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I can tell them stories. I feel like the old man now. It's like, here, boys, let me tell you a story about the time I met Bill Monroe, or let me tell you about the time me and Charlie Waller was doing this.
That's another good one.
And it's like all of a sudden I hear myself, and I'm like, Mike, you got to shut up. You're sounding old.
You don't have
but
to shut
cool.
up. I think it's amazing that this was this music that was created, and I was, and you were much more involved in it than I, but I would think, there's Bill Monroe, the guy, or, you know, all these, the Osborne brothers, they were like close second generation and country gentlemen and all these people that were still out there doing it.
Before we go, I'm going to tell you one more story. It has nothing to do with this album.
Okay.
But I wrote a song. It's recorded on our Field of Dreams album. You may have that one. I'm not sure, but I do. I wrote a song called Heaven Got an Angel. And we were performing at Stigma down in Nashville, and we did that song on stage on a contest or whatever. And when I got off stage, back in the green room, somebody came to me and said, Charlie Waller wants to talk with you. Well, Charlie had always been my idol. That man taught me how to sing, and he taught me how, just by listening to his albums. I had never met the guy as far as having a personal conversation or anything with him. And this woman said, Charlie wants to talk to you out here in the lobby. So I said, okay. So my knees are already knocking. And I'm just a skinny little runt. And I go out there in the lobby, and all these people are around him. And I kind of work my way up to him. And you know, Charlie had that big deep voice, and he said, did you write that song, Heaven Got an Angel? And I said, yes, sir, I did. He said, sing a bar of it for me. Well, I was so nervous that my mind went blank. I could not remember one single word of that song. And we're standing there in total silence, and he looked down at me, and he said, you did write the darn song, didn't you? And when he said that, it broke the ice, and I sung a verse to him, and he went on to record my song, Heaven Got an Angel. But from that day on, he and I were very close friends.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great story. That's a perfect example. It's a perfect example of what we were kind of hinting at, is that it was all still alive. And it's alive now. But, I mean, you know, the people were alive. I forgot. I didn't mention Charlie Waller, but, yeah, kind of gentleman and Ralph Stanley was still killing.
Ralph Stanley, I've sat and talked with Ralph many times before going on stage, and you know, we took it for granted back then, and now
that's what I'm trying to. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
We look at it as like, man, I wish I'd have got more pictures. I wish I would have had. Well, we didn't have smartphones and stuff back then either.
That's true. Wasn't it something? Wasn't it something? I talk to people like you, and I know you go back more in depth. I say I'm probably older, but you go back, cover all that area more in depth than I. And I just still think, and the tune Memories of Monroe, you know, the guy was, it's just, well, we've already beat it to death. I don't want to talk about it anymore, but what a fortunate time that we were able to see these things happen and participate in it to the extent that we did in our own ways.
We've been very blessed. I've been blessed. Yeah. Like I said, it's been a wonderful ride. It's like I tell people, you know, if it stopped tomorrow, I'd have no complaints. I had a wonderful experience. It's not going to stop tomorrow. I'm working hard to keep this thing going.
Well, here's a good before you introduce Crash and Burn, tell me about 30 Years of Nothing Fancy.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even realize it. And I will tell you right now, the lineup in the band that we have right now, Kurt Gosman is our guitar player and tenor singer, and a tremendous tenor singer. And I've got Jenkins. He goes by one name. Jenkins plays bass with us. A tremendous place, upright bass. So the band configuration right now, and Jacob Flick is not only playing banjo, steel guitar, he's singing bass. So we've got four-part harmony, doing a lot of gospel numbers now, a cappella numbers, stuff that we kind of had let fall off the back burner. But we started this band back in 1994, and I'm the actual last original member of the band. And Kurt came to me a month ago, and he said, Mike, said you realize that next year, 2024, is going to be 30 years in business for Nothing Fancy? And it kind of hit me like a load of bricks. I was like, wow, 30 years. So then I jumped on board really promoting it, trying to put together the 30-year Nothing Fancy tour.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So any promoters that are listening in, I would love to put your festival on the roster, because I'm not only going to be tooting the horn for Nothing Fancy, I want to really push everybody that books us, every festival that books us, every show, every venue. I'm going to get as much promotion for all of them as I am for myself, because 30 years in business is a long time. I don't care what business you're in. That's a lot of years, and it's a lot of miles. It's a lot of people that you've seen, and I really want to make as big a splash out of it as I can.
Okay.
And then that's going to propel me to start working on the next. I would say 30 years, but I can't guarantee that one. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this album, here we go again. Like I said, we came out of the pandemic. We went back in the studio. You're looking at a whole different dynamic of what's going on. That's where the title came from, Here We Go Again.
Yeah.
You're looking at songs, Time Gone By. It kind of lends itself to, well, there's some time that has gone by in this band. Look, we're going on 30 years. People look at me as a songwriter, and I tell them, well, yeah, the song's kind of about me. I look in the mirror every day, and I see more gray hairs, and I'm getting older. I don't mind it at all.
Here's what you do, Mike. Get rid of your mirror.
I'm growing into it.
Get rid of your mirrors.
Yeah, it's time gone by. You're looking, you know, the song we're getting ready to introduce,
Crash and Burn.
I've had, you know, the song is, I wrote it about a young couple that keep trying to have a romantic thing, and it never works out. They just keep trying, you know. But anyway, a lot of people are listening to the words of that, and they think that I wrote the song about the shape that our the country and the divisions and everything. And it's like, you know, when you look at it that way, it's like, wow, those words do fit for that. You know, something's got to change. We can't go on this way.
Or we're just going to crash and burn.
We're heading for a path of no return.
Yeah.
And these people are telling me that, and they come up and get real serious. I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't write it about that. But the words do fit.
Kind of fits, yeah.
And so when going back to where I said we don't really come up with a theme for an album, it kind of always falls in place. And this album, you know, it does have a theme. It's time gone by. Here we go again.
Yep.
We're looking at going to beaches, Little Island Love.
Even,
you know,
even the album cover is a road.
We're thinking back on, you know, the past and Bill and his music. And so every song on here kind of lends itself to that, even though we didn't set out to say, hey, let's choose this song because it fits, let's choose that song because it fits. We chose the songs because we liked them, and we knew our audience would like them.
And even the album cover, you're on traveling on the road somewhere, although I have to tell you the driver's in the middle of the road, which is not a good idea.
Hey, you haven't been with some of our drivers.
Okay. Mike Andy's, I knew I would enjoy this, and I love Nothing Fancy, and I'm thinking, this is so perfect, and I hope I haven't taken too much of your time up. I just enjoy the band and what you're doing and what you're thinking, and you've helped me so much with the thoughts you have into the album and what you're doing. I mean, I appreciate it. I think the whole world does, and that being said, let's here we go with Crash and Burn. I'll let you go. I heard your dog bark, so I figure she's back from wherever her trip was.
She's getting jealous of you now.
Okay, let's do Mike Andy's Nothing Fancy. The album is Here We Go Again. It's on Mountain Fever. Tell everybody at Mountain Fever I said hello when you're back around there again. I do enjoy what they do, and they help me out so much on the radio. So the release date September 29th. Of this year, and let's do a little short intro to Crash and Burn. I'll let you get back to your dog.
All right. Hey, folks, here's a song off of our brand new album, Here We Go Again. This is Mike Andy's with Nothing Fancy. Here's the song, Crash and Burn.
Thank you, Mike Andy's. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right.
See
you. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
Bye.